The quest to defend more than just a championship lives right here. New England Patriots coverage on CLNSradio.com. We want to hear from you, so call in right now. The phone lines are open, 929-477-2386.
And welcome into the CLNS Radio Patriots post-game show. I am Patrick Shancourt. Joining me tonight is our good pal, Jeff Kane. Jeff's a little late to the show tonight, so we'll cut him some slack and as we wait for him. But Patriots defeat the Colts in their first meeting since the AFC Championship game, in which the Indianapolis Colts started the entire Deflategate situation. This game has been scheduled on every Patriot fan and every Patriot player's calendar since the schedule came out in April. And it was a lot closer than people thought. A last-minute touchdown by the Colts made it a lot closer than it was. But the Patriots get the victory at the end, 34-27, to improve to 4-0. Indianapolis falls to 3-2 on the season. Just quickly through the stats, Tom Brady, 23-37 for 311 yards, three touchdowns, and his first interception off of a deflected ball from Julian Edelman. LeGarrette Blount leads the way rushing for the Patriots, 16 attempts for 95 yards and a touchdown. Receiving, Danny Amendola leads the way, seven catches for 105 yards. Rob Gronkowski and Julian Edelman both added on a touchdown as well. I believe our good pal Jeff Kane is now with us. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm good, Patrick. How you doing tonight? Patriots victory. How you like it?
I like it. And, you know, I've been joking on social media all week that the Pats have put up 100 points. And I did say before the game started, I said everyone is pumping up the Patriots. And the last time that every time it seems like the media starts to pump up New England and, oh, they're going to blow them out, it's a lot closer than it should be, 34-27. But I'm just pumped to have you back, Jeff. The old band's back together again. One last rodeo. Let's get into it tonight.
The old band is back together. And you know what? I did say earlier today on ESPN New Hampshire that this was going to be a lot closer than people thought. And I predicted a 34-28 score. And if it wasn't for one of the greatest plays I've ever seen from Jamie Collins, I'm right on, brother. I'm right on. But Patriots, you know, it was never really that close. I mean, the final score, you know, it's a 7-point victory for the Patriots. You know, Andrew Luck was able to march them down the field when the Patriots were playing, you know, three-man rush and just throw on us, take up some time defense. But other than, you know, the interception that was taken back for a touchdown, Indianapolis really did not have a good offensive showing of the Patriots tonight.
No, not at all. And, you know, the numbers, 34-27, you take away that, you know, last-minute touchdown where the Colts are kind of just flinging it. And even a defensive touchdown from Indianapolis on the pick six, you're looking at a much different game. And I thought that the Patriots, they came out kind of like they have in every game. They come out kind of slow. Indianapolis gets on the board first, and they go into halftime down 21-20. And I looked over at a couple of my friends, and I said, there's no way that they're not going to come out the first possession of the third quarter, score a touchdown. They do. And the second half was really the story of the game. The Patriots were outscoring them 14-0 until the end of the fourth quarter. But as much as I thought it would be a close game and everyone thought it was a blowout, I knew from the get-go that there was no way the Patriots would lose this game, especially just from Tom Brady. And, Jeff, we haven't been on the post-game show yet this year. I say it, and I've said it to a lot of people, but Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback in NFL history, and he proves it again tonight. I mean, 23-37. And for those of you who don't know, I'm very critical of Tom Brady. I've been on him for the last 8-9 years, but something's been going on since the playoffs. I mean, this guy has just been locked in. He throws his first interception of the season on a play that shouldn't even have been interception, where Julian Edelman drops the ball, gets deflected into the air for an interception. But, I mean, the guy has just been locked and loaded. And the thing that I love the most, and it's been happening since, I want to say, early last year, Tom Brady just looks like he is so much more comfortable in the pocket. He's mobile. He's agile. I've never seen Tom Brady move and step up in the pocket and get out of there and make plays. But he's doing things with his legs to extend the play. And that's the Tom Brady that I've been dying to see for the last 10 years. And he's finally doing it for the last 2 years. And the Patriots are winning games. So how can anyone not put Tom Brady as the number one quarterback, not just for this season, but of all time?
He has been unbelievably locked and loaded. You're right. He did throw his first interception tonight, but I'm not going to fault Tom Brady for that interception. You know, after that gruesome finger injury to Julian Edelman, the one thing that Chris Collinsworth got right is that it's going to affect him. Collinsworth, I swear, watches a different game than anyone else watches. But Julian Edelman, you know, three balls in his hands, three drops, trying to catch a little different. Well, that'll be something that will bear watching as the Patriots move on. They got beat up a little bit today, but, of course, got the victory. And, yeah, you're right. Tom Brady locked and loaded. Nothing better than the touchdown pass to give them 34 points against the Indianapolis Colts than that rollout, buying some time, rolling out and hitting LeGarrette Blount for the touchdown. We've seen Brady get better on his footwork. You've always said it, Patrick. You've said you always wanted to see him, you know, run the ball when he had to. Well, he doesn't exactly run the ball, but his pocket awareness has gotten 10 times better over the years. And nothing was better than that than earlier in the game. He stepped up in the pocket, dropped his shoulder, and tossed the ball downfield to Scott Chandler for a touchdown. I thought coming around the edge, I'm like, oh, that's a strip sack right there by Trent Cole, but did a phenomenal job he did.
929-477-2386, the number to call in. Again, 929-477-2386, the number to call in. The thing that's been the biggest question mark for every Patriot fan has been this offensive line. Brian Stork has been on the injured reserve, being able to return with the concussion. Nate Solder goes down on IR with the biceps injury last week. They bring in Marcus Cannon tonight. I thought he played very well at left tackle early on. He gets hurt with a foot injury. He didn't come back. They have to bring in Cameron Fleming, who just got activated off the practice squad. I believe it was yesterday, or if not yesterday, today. So the offensive line has been the question mark. And I believe it was with Mike in week two against Buffalo. You know, for the most part, they've held up on their own. You have the three rookies on the inside with Andrews being the center. You have Shaq Mason at the left guard. They've done pretty well. You saw Brady get hit a couple times. He got sacked twice tonight. And you got to think that's just a thing of how many backups of backups of backups can come in and keep this thing together. And for the most part, they've done good things with McDaniels and Brady doing the quick passes. And I think Brady's averaging something like 2.1 seconds of holding the ball before he gets rid of it. So they're getting those quick passes. But realistically, Jeff, how long can the Patriots withstand this offensive line going with so much turnover and so many injuries before it starts to break down and we see Brady ending up on the ground?
You know what? I'm not worried about it yet. And the reason I'm not worried about it is Googe has done a phenomenal job taking over for Dante Scarnecchia. It seems like, you know, ever since last year after the Cincinnati game, when the Patriots were able to really solidify this offensive line, they've done things that make things work. Brady gets rid of the ball quick. You know, they mix and match the offensive line. Losing Nate Solder for the season really hurts. You know, it looks like a toe injury to Marcus Cannon, which, you know, you don't want to see that. But then they moved, you know, Sebastian Vollmer to left tackle and brought in Cameron Fleming, the second-year player out of Stanford. And, you know, he played well as well. So while the depth right now doesn't look as great as it did earlier in the season, when you have a guy like Cameron Fleming who had a nice role with his team last year, be on your practice squad and step up, it's phenomenal to have. And, you know, Ryan Wendell hasn't dressed for a game yet, so he's going to come back in. And then when, of course, Brian Stork comes off the IR with designation to return, the Patriots are going to be better at that offensive line than they have been, and they've been really good this entire season.
I agree 100%. And like I said, you know, everyone keeps waiting for that game when the offensive line really has that breakdown and Brady gets hit, and we just have not seen it yet. And whether it's a combination of getting the ball out quickly, I know they've used Michael Williams, especially last week, as that extra offensive lineman / tight end to help out on the left side of the line. They've done some nice things. Now, obviously, there's going to be some questions coming up. Brandon LaFell will be activated off the PUP list, if not this week, then next week. So there's going to be some turnover on the roster. One guy who you might see ending up without a roster spot would be Aaron Dobson. With the emergence of Keyshawn Martin, the receiver the Patriots got in a trade with Houston, he had a nice 38-yard catch down the field today. And I feel like he's a very reminiscent player of Deion Branch. He's kind of short, but he's quick. He can get that deep ball, and he's been that – I'm not saying he's Randy Moss or he's a deep threat, but he gives the Patriots that extra option away from Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski, where you have that quick guy who can go down the field and make a catch. He had a great play today. When LaFell comes back, you know, who knows what his role will be. But I think Keyshawn Martin is stepping in nice. On the flip side, with new additions, Scott Chandler, and you mentioned the touchdown that he had earlier, got called back for a pass interference, which I thought was ridiculous to call in the first place, but only 2 catches for 39 yards, really has not had the impact that people thought he would. And I thought today was the day for him, because I knew that Rob Gronkowski was going to get that double coverage and he was going to be watched very closely. And I thought Chandler was going to have his Tim Wright moment against Indianapolis, where they leave him unguarded, he just goes off in the red zone, but he didn't. 2 catches, 39 yards. So with how many tight ends the Patriots have, they got rid of the Who Man, they have Michael Williams. What is a realistic expectation to have for guys like Scott Chandler, guys like Keyshawn Martin, who they've shown spurts, but nothing consistently, especially on Chandler's end?
Well, you know, I had Heath Evans on the Patriots Beat podcast a couple weeks ago, and we talked about the 2007 offense and how some weeks he would get 8 snaps, some weeks he'd get 18, next week he'd get 31, depending on the game plan. And that's one of the things with Scott Chandler. He is game plan specific here. You know, against the Dallas Cowboys, he was hardly used. You know, this week he was used a little more, but they seem to like what they get out of Williams as both a blocker and a receiver. As far as Scott Chandler goes, listen, a lot of people thought when they signed him, oh, here comes the double tight end offense. You know, Mike Greese of ESPN Boston was always talking about, you know, what was happening down at training camp with the Twin Towers. We saw it the first couple of weeks where they went out there and had Scott Chandler and Rob Gronkowski down by the end zone. But they haven't done that the last couple of weeks. I still love the signing of Scott Chandler because it gives you not only another viable target who has, you know, catches in this league, a lot of catches, over 200 catches in this league, but gosh forbid that anything should happen to Rob Gronkowski, you have a big receiving tight end who can catch the ball and, again, has caught the ball in this league.
I agree 100%. I think that Chandler, and there's so many guys in this offense that will come in at different points in the season and make their contribution. You look at Danny Amendola last year, everyone's saying they need to cut him, they need to cut ties. He has that big game-winning touchdown against the Jets. He has that big touchdown against Baltimore in the playoffs. And then, of course, in the Super Bowl, the touchdown before Edelman's. So different guys step in at different points and they make plays. And I think Chandler will be a guy where, you know, like you mentioned, he'll have 2 catches this week. He'll come out and have 10 catches the next week. So it's good depth to have behind Rob Gronkowski, a guy who I know that you don't like to say he's injury-prone, but has had a lot of injuries in his career. With this being the Indianapolis game, I wanted to come out here. And with all the fans complaining from Indianapolis about how the Patriots are cheaters, and at halftime when New England was going out to the locker room, they had the big cheaters exit sign there. Let me just say this. The New England Patriots have played the Indianapolis Colts, I believe, 5 times since Andrew Luck has gotten drafted and Chuck Pagano's been the head coach. They're 5-0. And we talk about the Patriots deflate balls or the Patriots do this and do that. Let's just look at it from a purely coaching standpoint. You're in a game where I believe at the time – it was 27-20. So you're in a game right now. It's a close game. You come out on 4th down in a punting situation, and I don't even know what to call that play because that literally was one of the strangest. And you look at the – and he's saying – and Pagano comes off. He says, why did you snap it? First of all, why are you putting your players in that situation to even have that formation on the field? Second of all, who allowed that formation to be on the field? And third of all, who miscommunicated on that sideline to get that ball snapped? It's just a matter of Indianapolis wants to complain about we're getting blown up by New England, they're cheating this and that. Look at it from a purely coaching standpoint. The Indianapolis Colts have been outcoached every single time the Patriots have played them. What has been the game plan since the Patriots took over? We're going to run the ball, we're going to run the ball, we're going to run the ball. What has Indianapolis done to stop that? They signed Frank Gore, an over-the-hill running back. They signed Andre Johnson, who has had no impact. They have not yet made their offensive or defensive line strong enough to protect Luck and to get pressure and stop the run. LeGarrette Blount, 16 carries, 95 yards, a touchdown. They rushed for 118 yards. It's just coaching, and their general manager has no idea what he's doing. I don't understand how people can keep using the excuse that the Patriots are cheaters. The Patriots, do things. The game in the Indianapolis Colts lack in both categories, offensively, defensively, and on special teams.
I couldn't agree with you more. They did. They lack. And that's the big thing. They really lack. And you look at what, you know, Tom Brady and the New England Patriots have done whether it's running the ball like they have the last four games or today where they turn around and they pass all over. I mean, Brady had a very good game today. I mean, Brady turns out and goes 23 of 37 for 312 yards, three touchdowns. That's a very good game. LeGarrette Blount, again, 16 carries, 93 yards. Deion Lewis, four carries for 21. 5.8 yards per carry for Blount and 5.3 yards per carry for Deion Lewis. That's great. And then you went underneath, you know, underneath receivers and Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman. Seven catches for Amendola for 105 yards. This guy's been on fire since you mentioned that Jets game. They don't win the Super Bowl without him last year. Solid signing by the Patriots. Sure, he didn't come in and take care of what Wes Welker did, but he's been a great complimentary wide receiver. Julian Edelman, six catches, 50 yards, and that touchdown. Unbelievable. And they've been able to work that. And they were able to work it the entire first half. And, you know, Indianapolis went out, and you could tell what they were out there to do. They were out there to stop Rob Gronkowski. And all that did was Rob Gronkowski just kind of, all right, I'll do it. I'll take the double teams. I'll take the triple teams. I'll let my little men do it. I'll let my little men go out and score touchdowns, catch balls, move the chains. And as, you know, they said on the broadcast over and over again, when the Patriots get into third and sixth, that's very hard, very, very hard to stop them there because you got Gronkowski down the seam, or if they line them up wide, they can go on a hook pattern. And then you have these crossing patterns underneath with these little guys that just move really, really well in Amendola and Edelman. And you know what? Next week they could have Brandon LaFell back, and that's just going to make this team even better.
Exactly, Jeff. 929-477-2386, number to call in. We have roughly about 40 minutes left on the show. So
on
if you
the FanDuel hotline, that is.
The FanDuel hotline, 929-477-2386. Again, the number to call in for our FanDuel hotline. Jeff, one thing that I wasn't a fan of, and I was disappointed, especially because of how reminiscent to start this game. They come out in zone defense. They weren't pressuring Luck. And the Colts were doing exactly what the Patriots' game plan is offensively. Those short crossing routes, get the ball out quick. And you would think if there was ever a formation or ever a situation that the Patriots would be equipped to handle, it'd be the same offensive formation that they come out and use so perfectly in games. And the Colts came out and they really picked apart the Patriots' defense through the first, you know, quarter and a half of the game. They obviously made adjustments in the second half and they slowed down Indianapolis. And you really didn't see much more offensively in the second half from Indianapolis. But I was very disappointed in Matt Patricia in this defense for not being able to stop the Colts doing what the Patriots do best. And we always hear about the Patriots being the bend but don't break offense or defense, the whole team's 3 points. The Colts came out and scored three touchdowns in that first half. And on all three drives, or two touchdowns, one was the pick six. But on both those scoring drives, Indianapolis really moved the ball very well. Luck had a clean pocket. And they just use those short crossing patterns to get the ball down the field. Is that something that you're not that concerned with, or are you as disappointed as I am that the Colts were so successful using plays and formations like that, which the Patriots see almost every day in practice?
I wasn't as disappointed as you were, Patrick, because, again, they allowed only 14 points on defense through that first quarter. And if you take away that last garbage touchdown, you know, that was thrown by Andrew Luck for the touchdown that made it 34-27. You know, the Patriots did what they had to do. Luck was very good in the first half, but the Patriots came out and listen, when you have a guy like Terrell Brown, you know, go on IR earlier in the season, you have probably your best defensive player all around in Dont'a Hightower out for the game there. And you basically have to go in with Logan Ryan as your second quarterback and Justin Coleman as your third cornerback, you got to sit there and something's gonna happen. So the Patriots decided, you know what, we're going to go back into the zone and we're going to make them beat us down the field a little bit at a time. They go into that bend but don't break. You know, they held them down to a fourth and one play, a 50-50 ball that Dont'a Moncrief came down with over Logan Ryan. I'm not upset about that. I thought they played very well. Unfortunately, they weren't able to get off the field a couple times. Your man Devin McCourty got hit, you know, for a pass interference, which was horse crap, if you ask me. I mean,
awful call.
Know, and I'll take every shot I can at D-Mac just because you like him. But that was just first of all, I believe the ball was uncatchable. Second of all, you know, it was perfect, absolutely perfect positioning by Devin McCourty. Reminded me a lot of last year's game against the Green Bay Packers, where you had Darrell Revis going down the sideline against, I believe it was Randall Cobb, and he got called for a pass interference there. And, you know, it's pretty ridiculous because sometimes I think, you know, it's a judgment call on the official, and any little bit of touching, sneezing at, or anything like that calls a pass interference. So, yeah, I mean, would I like to see the Patriots go out and absolutely, you know, destroy Andrew Luck and get after him and everything like that? Sure, I would. But I'm not disappointed with what the defense did because all in all, I mean, they had a very, very good game plan. They still came away with 3 sacks, 2.5 by Chandler Jones and 0.5 sack by Don Beasley, who's really coming along very well. So they still got after the passer. Sure, they didn't get after the passer the way they really wanted to or the way we all really wanted to, but they still held them to, you know, basically 21 offensive points.
I agree. And you look at the players that they haven't had, like you mentioned, Dante Hightower wasn't there tonight. Terrell Brown goes on IR. And then you go back to last year, losing Darrell Revis, losing Kyle Arrington, losing Brandon Browner. Those three guys, you lose your top three corners from your Super Bowl winning team. And you have Malcolm Butler who, and I know Malcolm Butler's a great guy, but outside of that interception in the Super Bowl, if Malcolm Butler came into training camp as the starting cornerback, every Patriot fan would be like, who's this kid? Why is he number one? How is he going to replace Revis? So it's kind of been a learn as you go. And they even mentioned, I believe it was Al Michaels who brought it up on the telecast, where the Patriots and Belichick usually just double team your number one guy and make your surrounding guys beat you. But they came out week one and put Malcolm Butler right on Antonio Brown, and everyone came out after that game and said how bad he played, which, you know, Antonio Brown is arguably one of the best receivers in the NFL. He's going to get his. And I thought Butler played him very well. You go tonight, I think the stat was 4 catches for 80 yards and a touchdown on Butler. The one touchdown, it's a 50-50 ball, like you mentioned, and I thought he had great coverage. He jumped a tad bit early, but he played it very well. And I think that when learning on the fly and you have this new secondary, you're going to see things break down. You're going to have adjustments lost. And, I mean, it hasn't cost him yet through 5 games. And as you look at the next 3 weeks, you're taking on Ryan Fitzpatrick, Ryan Tannehill, and Kirk Cousins all at home. So you talk about lower-tier quarterbacks that you have time to gel. They really don't play an established quarterback until November 15th when they take on Eli Manning. And we all know Eli Manning is very up and down. So, I mean, I think this is the stretch right here. And they got lucky, obviously, losing out on Tony Romo and Dez Bryant in week five. But, I mean, they have a stretch right here in the next 3 or 4 games where they can really do some things on defense and kind of and get what they want to do and start gelling, because you're not really taking on any big threats on offense for the next 3 weeks. And you're at home, which is even better for the Patriots, where they rarely lose. I think this stretch of 3 games coming up is going to be very telling for the defense and get them a lot of confidence going forward to that second half of the season.
Yeah, you know, I look at a guy like Malcolm Butler, and you might be right. If it wasn't for that interception at the end of Super Bowl 49, you know, a lot of people would wonder exactly who he is and what he's doing. Listen, you're never going to, or you might not right now, mistake Malcolm Butler for Darrell Revis. I mean, we're talking about a guy who was a first-round draft pick, and Revis, who is arguably one of the best cornerbacks of his generation, versus a guy who fought and clawed his way to get into the NFL. I mean, you know, most guys come out of the college, and if they're undrafted rookie free agents, you know, they get a signing bonus and that, this and that. Malcolm Butler only got a tryout, and he was signed after a tryout. This is a hardworking kid who is continuing to progress. He seems to be right where he needs to be. It's going to take a little bit more, you know, seasoning for him to become that great shutdown cornerback. There are times where he looks to be that shutdown cornerback, and he looks to be, you know, right there making that play. I mean, at the very end of the game there, he had a great play on the sideline with Moncrief. That touchdown, I mean, he was in very good position, just jumped a bit too early. You know, the one thing that is a little worrisome to me with Malcolm Butler is the fact that he hasn't been able to really get his hands on the ball and secure it. I'm glad that he secured that touch that interception to win the Super Bowl, but really since then, you know, he's got one interception on the season. He's had his hands on 3 or 4 balls that he could have intercepted already.
And people are, and I saw Skip Bayless tweet it. He says, wait till Malcolm Butler starts catching these balls that he drops. And there's probably, I'd say, one a game where he could make the play, but it just kind of falls down or it gets deflected away. But that play, I believe it was on either Moncrief or Waylon on the sideline where he basically had it in his hands, and as they went to the ground, it came loose. But, I mean, he's been in great positions, and it's surprising for a guy who – and maybe this was him being around Revis and being around Browner and being around these guys for a full year. but just instinctively, he knows where to be. And you don't see – I think there might have been one or two times this year where he's just gotten flat out beaten on a play. But even tonight, he's covering Hilton, covering Moncrief, and he held his own. He really did. And even on the touchdown that we mentioned, you know, it's good coverage, and sometimes receivers will grab that ball. But I'm very I wouldn't say I'm as confident. I'm obviously not as confident as I was last year in our secondary. Having Malcolm Butler there, I mean, it's a lot better than 2011 when you had Julian Edelman and Matthew Slater playing on defense. And I know it's very early in the 2007 comparisons will be made from now until Super Bowl 50. But Asante Samuel was a guy who dropped a lot of balls. I think I'm more confident with Malcolm Butler and whoever's on the other side of him than I was with Asante Samuel and Ellis Hobbs, the joke Ellis Hobbs was.
Michael Holly be upset that, with you. That was his man, the third.
You know, and even Harmon, to an extent, he's stepped up tremendously this year.
I think Harmon's a great game.
He has, and I think that with the secondary this year, especially in the back end, you have the ability to where if you need to help out on your number two guy because Logan Ryan's slacking or Justin Coleman's slacking, you have guys like McCourty, guys like Harmon that can come over and help you because you have that confidence and you have that trust in Malcolm Butler. So I think that as we go forward, you'll see the Patriots and our secondary improve, but even defensively as a whole in this game tonight. This is an Indianapolis team. They're getting Andrew Luck back. They've been waiting just as long to play the Patriots and prove that they can get the job done just as long as the Patriots have been waiting. And Luck throws for 312 yards on 50 attempts. They had no offensive gel in the second half. And like you mentioned, Chandler Jones, 2.5 sacks. They came to play, I think, and easily had one as well. They came to play in the second half, and that defense in the second half has been the motto the entire year. Dallas last week in the second half, I don't think they had a lot of points. Going back to the Pittsburgh game, I think the only touchdown they gave up in the second half was that late score to Antonio Brown at the end of the fourth quarter. The defense in the second half has come out each and every week and held their own tremendously. So if that's the trend, I mean, like I mentioned, the schedule, do you trust Ryan Fitzpatrick or do you trust Tyrod Taylor or do you trust Brian Hoyer to come out when you're down by a score or two in the fourth quarter to lead you to victory against this defense? Because I sure don't. And I think that the fact that they have such great chemistry and they have such great coaching, I just don't see them lapsing and falling behind in the second half and giving up so many points. Because I don't see any of these quarterbacks on the list coming down being able to beat you. If Andrew Luck couldn't do it tonight, I mean, I have no confidence in any of those quarterbacks coming up on the schedule to be able to get the job done in the second half against this defense.
I couldn't agree with you more. And the defense has really come along in the second half, and it does remind me a lot of what the Patriots defense used to be, you know, going back to the 2004 team, which after they lost Ty Law to an injury in the Pittsburgh Steelers game that year, the first game they lost that season, it was a lot of mixing and matching. We had guys like Randall Gay and Earthwin Moreland and, you know, guys like that, Troy Brown playing a little bit in the defensive backfield. And it was a lot of mix and match. And the Patriots are doing that this year. And you're right, the defensive secondary is going to get better. The front seven is very good right now. I like what the front seven is doing. A little concerned with what they did, you know, trying to stop. There were a couple big runs there against that front seven. Silva Salinga had a very bad game to me. You know, he didn't do very well in fact, in stopping any of the interior cuts. It seemed like he was walled out a lot by the left guard and the right guard. You know, this front seven, I like how active they are. Devin McCourty has done a very nice job of solidifying this defense, and it was a good thing that he was re-signed by the New England Patriots this past year because it gives him that veteran presence. And while I don't love McCourty playing the cornerback position, he did pretty well there today. And then you have a guy, as I said, like Malcolm Butler. But with all these safeties that they have and the fact that they have Daron Harmon who's really stepping up and second-round pick, Jordan Richards, I think, has done a fine job. You know, they've done some really nice things. It's been team defense that they keep doing, and I'm liking what I'm seeing. Let's switch it up a little bit here, Patrick, and talk a little bit about this offense.
I mean, again, the comparisons to 2007 have been there, and I disagree with Chris Collinsworth, who says that he thinks that the 2017 was more explosive. I'll agree with the fact that they had the home run threat in Randy Moss. But you look at the amount of options they have this year, even in tonight's game. Rob Gronkowski gets double covered. He's not there. Danny Amendola, 7 catches, 105 yards. Edelman had 6 catches. he probably dropped two or three more on the field. Deion Lewis, who's been here the entire season, making plays out of the backfield, being your Danny Woodhead, being your Shane Vereen, being your Kevin Falk. This offense has so many players that can beat you. And if you take away Rob Gronkowski and you have Edelman shut down, here comes Keyshawn Martin for a 40-yard completion. And this is all done without Brandon LaFell, who was your true number one receiver last year on the right side of the field, that says, hey, I'm going to line up on the outside of the field and I'll get down the field. And that opens things up even more. This offense is special this year, and especially the way Tom Brady has been playing. You know, he's on a mission. You know, this is the revenge tour 2015. We all know that. This offense, their worst offensive game to date was last week against, or the week one against Pittsburgh. They still put up 28 points. They got 30 against Dallas. But other than that, they've scored three games where they've had 40, 51, and 34. And they're doing it so consistently. I mean, Ryan Allen, he had two or three punts tonight, but where has this guy been the entire season? He's on the sideline every week. The offense, there's been so many drives where they come out and it's just boom, 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 touchdown. Pass, 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 run, touchdown. It's remarkable. And, you know, I think next week will be their best test to date, because I think the Jets have the best defense out of all the teams they've played. So I'm interested to see what happens next week. But this offense, I mean, I've never seen – and 2007 was special, but I have never seen an offense put up so many consistent drives and have so many great plays through this many games in the season. I mean, it's just remarkable.
Oh, yeah, it's remarkable what they've been able to do. Let's take a quick break here, Patrick, and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll get back and talk about this this Patriots offense and what they've been able to do.
Cruise back to the 80s on the first ever 80s cruise. That's right. 7 days of the most radical party to ever hit the high seas, with a totally awesome lineup of artists that define the sound of the decade. Join Huey Lewis and the News, Richard Marx, Starship, Kool & the Gang, A Flock of Seagulls, Modern English, Naked Eyes, Tiffany, Wang Chung, and Jessie's Girl, the ultimate 80s party band, and the original MTV VJs, Nina Blackwood, Mark Goodman, and Alan Hunter. As we cruise to exotic ports of call like Grand Turk, San Juan, St. Thomas, and the private island of Half Moon Cay, we're going all out by building an 80s video game arcade with Donkey Kong, Mario Brothers, and of course Pac-Man, showing movies like Ferris Bueller and Pretty in Pink, and there'll even be a VJ contest. Don't forget to pack your best 80s looks, because we're having a prom night, a movie costume party, pajama party, and neon beach party. You can't miss this. Sailing from February 28th through March 6th, 2016, for the most gnarly vacation ever. For more information, log on to the80scruise.com or call 844-384-8080.
And welcome back into the CLNS Radio Patriots postgame show. Jeff, I wanted to say I'm a little disappointed that Rob Gronkowski and LeGarrette Blount weren't as productive tonight, because they were on my FanDuel lineup tonight and they cost me some money. Now, as we all know, FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football. They pay out roughly $75 million each week and are expecting to pay out $2 billion this year. Building a team is easy. You just pick your players, stay under the salary cap, sit back, and watch the game. Entry fees start at just $1. Anyone can play. If you think you know football, come prove it at FanDuel.com. If you go to FanDuel.com, use the promo code Patriots and sign up now. It's a special offer to users. And on top of all that, if you put $200 in, they'll match you up to $200, and they'll give you the first 50 people matched up $200 by using the promo code Patriots. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Sign up today. Like I mentioned, I was kind of upset that Rob Gronkowski wasn't involved. He only had three catches for 50 yards and a touchdown. I mean, he still gave me 14 or 15 points in the lineup. But, it just goes back to what we were talking about before the break and just how many options this offense has. And if Rob's not there, you got Julian Edelman. And if Edelman's not there, Scott Chandler, Amendola, Keyshawn Martin, Deion Lewis. I mean, the list goes on and on for how many true weapons they have on offense.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, when you play FanDuel, you look for that one or two players that might turn around and give you that extra little something. And I grabbed Danny Amendola, you know, with the 10 catches for over 100 yards.
Oh, you lucky guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you get him on the cheap. That's how you got to win. So right now I'm looking. Depending on what happens tomorrow night, and that's it, I could be in the money, brother. I could be in the money. You might see me on one of those commercials, you know, with a big check dancing up and down and everything like that. That'll be me. I'm loving it. Loving it here, you know, on the Patriots postgame show. And, of course, we have the FanDuel hotline, 929-477-2386.
All right, Jeff, I've waited about 40 minutes, and I didn't want to bring it up, but I'm starting to get the hype. I'm looking at the post-game quotes coming in. When can we start realistically talking about an undefeated season? Jeff, I'm looking at the schedule. The only team on the next 11 games that really truly scares me are the Denver Broncos, and that's saying something for how badly they've played this year and how noodle arm Manning has looked. I just cannot see any of these teams coming into Gillette Stadium and beating them. And you look at the road games, at the Giants, at the Broncos, at Houston, at Jets, at Miami. I don't know, Jeff. I think that the way they've played offensively, how explosive they've been, and how the defense has looked over the last three or four games, especially in the second half, I think you can start making the argument that they could do it. They could run the table.
Patrick, you know what? You're a little too young to remember Pete Carroll's first season in New England in 1997. They started out 4-0. It was a great game that they beat the New York Jets in overtime. I believe it was on a blocked field goal. And after the game, Pete Carroll comes out talking about, you know, this team might go undefeated. This team might go undefeated. It is almost impossible to go undefeated in the regular season in the NFL these days. The 2007 New England Patriots were a very, very, very special team. And not only did they have, you know, Brady and Moss and Wes Welker, but their defense had, you know, great stalwarts with Teddy Bruschi, and Rodney Harrison. This team that I look at right now, the Patriots of 2015, sure, could they run the table? Yeah, they could run the table, but odds are that they are going to trip up at some point here. And you know what? That's going to be okay. I look at the schedule, and yeah, there are certain games you look and you say, oh, the Patriots will be fine there, you know, oh, no big deal. But it isn't as easy as you look and think. I mean, next week's game against the Jets, yes, it is here. The Jets are playing some very good football, and they're 4-1. When they go into, the Meadowlands, that's an easy loss there. That could be a game that you lose. Again, you've got to travel to the Meadowlands to play the New York Giants. The Giants always play the Patriots tough. Always, always play the Patriots tough. I could see a loss there. And I could see a loss, as you said, against the Denver Broncos. I mean, the Broncos right now sit at 6-0. And I heard a great analogy earlier today on one of the radio stations that I was listening to about how no team has counted on their defense to win as much as the Broncos since the 2000 Ravens. And you do have a Hall of Fame quarterback in Peyton Manning. Now, is Manning as great as he was 2 or 3 years ago? No, he definitely has some issues, but he still can move the ball down the field. And, you know, if anyone's going to stop the New England Patriots, this Broncos defense has a chance to do it. Now, the Broncos coming into today's game, I think, had a record against them 6-21 or 6-24. I don't remember the exact numbers. So they haven't been tested yet. They'll be tested in 2 weeks when they play the Green Bay Packers, a game where I think the Packers will walk all over them. But that's one of those games that you could possibly lose. It is way, way, way too early to start talking about an undefeated season. You know, we were lucky to see it once. Unfortunately, the ball bounced the wrong way. Velcro won a helmet catch. And the Patriots, you know, finished 18-1. It's very hard to become undefeated. And I cannot see the Patriots doing this year. Can I see them winning the Super Bowl? Hell yeah. I think they're the most talented team in the AFC. I think they only get better as time goes on. But I believe they'll drop one, maybe two games at least, finish this season at a 14-2 or 15-1. But they could drop as many as three. And after a 5-0 start here, that's going to be a little tough to imagine the Patriots, losing three games. But there's a chance they could lose one or two.
I understand to a point, and I will say that to win 16 consecutive games in a league like the NFL where there's so much parity and there's so much competition, it is very hard. Now, the similarities from 07 to this season, you have the controversy coming into the season, you have a fired up Tom Brady, and you have an explosive offense. Defensively, you don't have those leaders like you had in 07, the Teddy Bruschis of the world, the Rodney Harrisons of the world, and even offensively, the Kevin Falk of the world, those high-quality veteran leaders that really picked up young guys. What I will say is going into this season, when the schedule was released, people were saying Dallas could be a loss, Indianapolis could be a loss, Denver could be a loss, Philadelphia could be a loss, Houston could have been a loss, just going through it. I think the Patriots have been very fortunate and gotten some pretty good breaks go their way. Pittsburgh was a quality team, and they're one of the better teams in the AFC, but there's no way New England loses that first game at home after the whole Deflategate situation. So whoever came in Gillette week one was going to lose. Dallas, they lose Romo, they lose Dez Bryant, which on the flip side of the argument shows you how easy it can be to lose a key player and have your season fall apart. Dallas is the example. They come in a tough road game at Indy that we knew was going to have them all fired up. They win that game. They bring up the Jets next week. That's going to be a great game. And I think that this defense for the Jets is a top five defense with Revis and Cromartie in their front seven. But when was the last time the Jets really gave the Patriots trouble at home? You go back to 2010, that playoff game. The Jets are that team. They have to have everything go right for them to win against the Patriots. And I don't see that happening. Now, you know, a lot of the points you made up, you brought up are very valid. You know, they could go in to the Meadowlands and lose to the Giants or the Jets or even to Denver. But I just see the way the schedule falls and how many breaks they're getting down the line. Philadelphia looks like a joke. Peyton Manning, I mean, that Denver defense is legit, but this is arguably the greatest offense in the NFL right now. I think the Patriots offense is much better than the Denver defense. And I think you'll see on Sunday, it'll be a telling tale of how the Patriots can play the Jets offensively, because the Jets have a great defense. They have a great secondary, and they can get to the quarterback quick, especially with the beat-up offensive line that the Patriots have. I just think with how they've looked offensively and the breaks they're getting on the schedule, I can't imagine a team getting to the shootout level of the Patriots' ability and being able to beat them for four straight quarters. It could very well happen, and they could lose a game or two or three. But, I mean, I just looking at the schedule, Denver's the only team that I think has a shot to do it. And I don't even think they can pull it all together with Peyton Manning for four straight quarters to keep this offense down. I think that if there was any of the teams going right now, I think there's five of them that are undefeated. I think the Patriots have the best shot of being able to keep it going for the next 11 weeks and get to 16-0.
I look at last year when you talked about, the Jets. When was the last time they gave the Patriots a hard time at home? Well, last year was that time. With a much better defense, the Patriots were very lucky to beat the Jets at home 27-25 when Chris Jones blocked a field goal. The Jets always give the Patriots a hard time.
But last season's team, though, was such a different team from weeks one to week seven than they were to the end of the season. In that Jet game, they were still trying to figure things out defensively. They weren't fully there as a unit. And even offensively, they didn't have all their pieces healthy and ready to go. So last year, I think it's hard to look at that team because you could say the same thing looking at, they were 2-2 and they could have missed the playoffs. I think last year was such a different Patriots team from the start to finish that it's really hard to use any of the games last year as a telling point
No, it is. But a lot of people are going to sit here and listen to the Patriots postgame show here on CLNS Radio, and they're going to think about, what I'm about to say is ludicrous, but the Jets are a formidable team this year. I mean, not only defensively, but also offense. I mean, defensively, they're allowing 15 points per game. They're first in the league in that. They're first in the league in total yards against with 269. First in the league in passing defense, only allowing 186.6. And third in the league in rushing yards, only allowing 82.6. That is a great defense. And their offense has been surprisingly good. They're scoring 25.8 points per game. Good for eighth in the league. Their running team is unbelievable. They're averaging 146 yards per game. The way that the Patriots have been gashed a little bit here, especially tonight against Frank Gore, the way that they've been gashed a little bit here, I look at this team and, Chris Ivory is averaging 5.5 yards per carry. He's 83 carries for 460 yards. He could have a field day next week against the Patriots. So, I look at this and here's the difference between last year's Jets team and this year's Jets team. They have a quarterback who's a very good game manager. Ryan Fitzpatrick, he may not be the greatest quarterback of all time, but he makes plays. And I mean, he has 9 touchdowns on the season. He's completed almost 63% of his passes, and they have some really good players catching the ball. Brandon Marshall. Tell me who's going to line up against Brandon Marshall next week. Now, I'm going to pick the Patriots to win. It's a home game. I think the Patriots offense is great. But flip the places. Put it down in the Meadowlands. Later on in the season, week 16, I think they play. This could be for the Jets to get into the playoffs. And that's a game that they're going to be fired up for. I look at this Jets team, and I'm impressed with what I've seen out of first-year coach Todd Bowles.
Yeah, I do think that people are sleeping on the Jets a lot. And going even back to last year, I remember Chris Ivory. I think he had, I have it up right here, 21 carries, 107 yards and a touchdown, averaged over 5 yards a carry. It was a great job by the Jets offensively, with Geno Smith as the quarterback back then. You know, he managed the game very well, had them in position to win it, and Chris Jones gets the block. Now, last year, that was back, I believe that was the week right following when Stephen Ridley went down with the ACL. And
yes,
they lost somebody else, I think, that same week. But was it they lost Mayo too that the week
Mayo.
Before? Yeah, so they lost Mayo and Ridley the week before. And looking at the stats, and I remember this game, the Patriots only ran the ball 15 times. They Shane Breen was their true running back. Gray only rushed 3 times. I think with the Jets, I mean, I'm not going to come out here and say that we're going to walk all over them, but I think when you have LeGarrette Blount in there as your established running back to take some pressure off Brady, the way Brady's played this year, and I know the defense is different because they don't have Revis and Browner and all those guys, but I mean, if they get Dante Hightower back healthy this week, I still think the Patriots have one of the best linebacking duos in the NFL with Hightower, Collins, and Mayo. The front seven for the Patriots, I mean, this year, Chandler, you can get pressure from any of these guys. Chandler Jones, Jabal Sheard, Dominic Easley had one tonight. Malcolm Brown's been getting better. His best game was last week. Like you said, a home game coming off of back-to-back road games, I can't see the Patriots losing it. But I will say if there was a game the Patriots lose it, they're going to lose to the Jets, it would probably be more towards that Week 16 game in New York where they could be fighting for a playoff spot. But I'm just excited because I don't think the Patriots have really had a competitive playoff team play them yet. And I know Indianapolis could have been that team, but they'll make the playoffs, but out of the AFC South,
Indy's a weak
is that
team.
Really saying? Exactly. And if they make the playoffs, is that saying much coming out of the AFC South? It's kind of very similar to the Cowboys could have been a great test. They lose Romo and Bryan, and now the whole NFC East is kind of a weak division. So this is really going to be the first true test of the Patriots to play a team, a good quality team on offense and defense, a team that could be in the playoffs come January. And they'll have a good test with it. And, you know, obviously they'll go through the motions. But one thing I will say that the Jets are going to be happy about is the Patriots lost a lot of guys tonight. Jabal Sheard went down with an injury. He did not return. Marcus Cannon went down with that toe injury. He did not return. Matthew Slater, which people are saying, you know, it's not that big of a deal, but Matthew Slater is arguably the best special teams player in the NFL. He got carted off with a knee injury. That is It looks bad. And if he's gone for a significant amount of time, you can't just bring up another guy from free agency to the practice squad to fill that role. I mean, Matthew Slater is so valuable on those punt and kickoff returns, making sure he's in position to make that tackle and make those stops. That's a big loss. And I don't know how they're going to recover from that next week. We'll see what the move is or if it's serious enough. But people should not be sleeping on the loss of Matthew Slater as a special team, especially when you look at how poor, just going back to this week, you saw the Michigan Wolverines muffle punt. Indianapolis had a weird situation with their punt tonight. Special teams are important, and they can cost you a game. And Matthew Slater is among the cream of the crop when it comes to special teams players from ability and intelligence.
Matthew Slater is this generation's Steve Tasker. For any of you who were NFL fans in the 1990s, Buffalo Bills had number 89 wide receiver Steve Tasker was probably one of the best special teams mavens of all time. And Matthew Slater has done that. This week coming up, I mean, you're right. There were a lot of injuries here tonight. I mean, we lost, they lost Marcus Cannon earlier. They were able to, do some things that allowed Cannon's replacement, Sebastian Vollmer, step up and do some things. Hopefully, you know, it's just a simple toe injury. They kept him out for precautionary reasons. The ankle injury, again, to Jabal Sheard. Again, if it's the high ankle sprain, you get a little worried. If it's a low ankle sprain, you know, he should be all right next week. The Slater injury, that's going to hurt. But, you know, if the Patriots have another week here. And, you know, this will be a very big test for the Patriots against a very aggressive defense. They do very well against the run. And then you've got Revis and Kermadi and Buster Screen against this Patriots offense. If any defense can stop them right now, I'm thinking it might be Todd Bowles and this New York Jets defense. He did phenomenal things in Arizona as the defense coordinator. He's doing some really good things right now. And Chris Ivory, again, the last two games, 166 yards rushing and then 146 yards rushing. Granted, you're going up against the Miami Dolphins and the Washington Redskins. The Jets really haven't played a great team yet. And they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles. But still, I think the Jets could give the Patriots their toughest test to date.
I agree, and especially with the way the Patriots have kind of had those lapses in run defense. I remember, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago against Denver when I believe it was it Monty Ball that came in rushed for 200 yards against the defense?
Yeah.
I forget who the, yep. Yeah, Monty Ball. And the Chris Ivory last year, over 100 yards rushing. They do have the lack of
Sean Moreno. No
Sean Moreno. That was the guy in 2013. But, I mean, even tonight, Frank Gore, 78 yards on 13 carries, average 6 yards. The Patriots, and especially without having Vince Wilfork there, who I know that people are saying that he was old and it had to be time to move on, but they really didn't have a plan in place. And I know that they've tried Silver Saliga as their run stopper, Alan Branch at times, but there's really no replacing Vince Wilfork. So if Chris Ivory gets going on the ground, I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick, very good game manager. I'm not saying he can beat you, but if you keep the Jets in the game, and it's really with any team that has a decent quarterback where he won't turn it over, you keep a guy in the game like that, just like last year, Geno Smith kept him in the game. You know, Ivory got his, and they were in position to win the game. And the Jets, I know I said they don't give you a hard time, but I say out of all three divisional teams on a consistent basis, they are the team that always gives the Patriots a scare. Even, I think it was last year, in New York, they won by 3 points. They barely got out of there with a win. So it will be a tough test, and I think that they do have one of the better defenses. I think they even have a better defense than the Broncos in the sense of, you look at their secondary, outside of Aqib Talib, you can find other ways around the Denver Broncos. They have a phenomenal pass rush in front seven. But the Jets will get you with Revis. You kind of really can't go after him. Cromartie is a very solid number two. They have good safety play. It's going to be a tough test, and I think that going forward, you'll see what the Jets do, I think, will be the game plan for other teams to go forward to stop the Patriots. Now, with that being said, Jeff, I'm going to ask you as we kind of close up tonight and look towards next week, what are the Patriots – give me three keys that you think the Patriots are going to have to utilize to go into this game next week at home and beat the New York Jets?
Number one is going to be stopping the run. You have got to stop Chris Ivory. You have got to stop Belai Powell. That's the number one key right there. Make Ryan Fitzpatrick beat you with his arm. If the Jets turn around and they get the time of possession and Chris Ivory is allowed to run downhill and keep Tom Brady off the field, that is going to be a very scary proposition for the Patriots. Number two is going to be protecting Tom Brady. We've already talked about it. You know, with the injuries sitting here, you know, for the Patriots on the offensive line, basically starting three rookies, we don't know what the status is on Marcus Cannon yet and what's going to happen. The Jets can get after the passer. Now, they have Muhammad Wilkerson, who's a great player with 4 sacks on the season. He's a guy that you're going to have to really account for. The Jets are going to try to get after Tom Brady, and you're going to have to get the ball out of there very fast. I'm looking at the game plan for next week, and I already know what it is. It's that they're going to spread them out and try to beat them that way because Josh McDaniels is not going to want to run against this Jets front. It's just too good. They're going to abandon the run like they did in week two against the Buffalo Bills, a game where they ended up winning 40-32. But because they weren't able to, you know, establish a run game at the end of the game when they were trying to embarrass the Buffalo Bills, they almost gave it right back to them. That's why number two is protecting Tom Brady. And the number three thing is taking the Jets out of the game early, getting up. Again, going back to my first point, you've got to get up on New York Jets and make them become one-dimensional and pass the ball. You can play help defense on Brandon Marshall, and then you should be okay, even though Eric Decker is a very good second wide receiver. If you can find a way to shut down Chris Ivory, make Ryan Fitzpatrick beat you with his arm, and you know then play help defense over the top on Brandon Marshall, you have a very good chance of winning. You just got to continue to move the ball and keep Tom Brady upright.
Exactly. I agree on all your points. And you know, touching back on to what you were saying about abandoning the run against Buffalo, they did the same thing at the Jets last year. They only ran the ball 15 times. Kareem led them with 11.
And you know how much I love the ball.
I was going to say, I haven't heard you as much this year get on the Patriots for not running the ball 30 times a game. They only had 25 tonight. But I do think that sometimes, and I disagree with it personally, the way that McDaniels and Brady will say, you know what, we'll pass the ball 60 times and we'll pass for 20 screens, and that's our running game. I think that when you think like that, you get too predictable, and the Patriots have had that tendency in the past to get too predictable. And if you abandon one facet of your game, it's so much easier to stack the secondary and only rush three or four, especially with a depleted offensive line, you can really get to Brady and force some things. So I'm hoping that they don't abandon the running game right away. And even if you're running for 2 or 3 yards a carry and you're struggling, you're still keeping them honest. You're keeping your play action available to you. And it opens more things up. So that's what I'm hoping, is they don't just abandon the run like they did against Buffalo in week two. But, you know, with that being said, Jeff, you know, we're running out of show here. We're running out of it here. So let me ask you my final question or thought here is, looking forward with all these injuries on the offensive line, let's just say Marcus Cannon cannot go. We're still maybe a week or two away from Ryan Wendell. We're still about 2 weeks away from Brian Storr coming back. They pushed the trade deadline back another month. I think the Patriots will make a trade somewhere. Do you see the offensive line being a position that they address, whether it's through free agency or through the trade deadline, to kind of get through these next couple weeks before you get Wendell and Stork back to really solidify their offensive line?
I don't see a trade coming on the offensive line unless Marcus Cannon's injury is severe. If Marcus Cannon is able to come back and play next week, I think your tackle spot is okay with Vollmer, Fleming, and Cannon. I think you're going to be getting Wendell back soon. You know, the three rookies have played absolutely phenomenal. Josh Klein has played well. You're going to be getting Brian Stork back after week, I think it's week 10. So I'm looking at that right there. If I'm the Patriots and there's going to be some kind of trade, I think it's going to be for a cornerback. You know, they've lost Terrell Brown to a season-ending foot injury. That hurts big time. You know, they have Logan Ryan, who, while Chris Collinsworth might sit there and say has had a phenomenal start to the season and been playing great.
Logan Ryan sucks. I'm sorry.
He's a solid third or fourth cornerback. He's nothing better than that. I could see the Patriots going out and making a trade for a cornerback. One thing to look at, you don't get a lot of player-for-player trades in the NFL. The Patriots have made a couple this year. You know, they traded Hooman for Akeem Hicks. That looks like it might be a pretty good trade there. But I'm looking at a guy like Aaron Dobson who, again, we talked about it at the top of the show, out for the season, not out for the season, but out for the game here, 2 games in a row he's been a healthy scratch. After I thought he may turn the corner against the Buffalo Bills, you got Brandon LaFell ready to come back next week against the Jets. He's able to come off the PUP list. That's a guy right there, former second-round pick, a lot of talent there, that the Patriots, it's a chip that they could move for a cornerback. I'm looking squarely at the Kansas City Chiefs and Marcus Cooper, a guy that the Patriots really liked out of Rutgers, you know, and making that trade there. And I'd love to see that, and I know you'd love to see them trade for Jason McCourty.
Oh, if they could get Jason McCourty, I'd say 19-0 every single season until they both retired. But I do agree that cornerback is a position they got to look at, especially, you know, you mentioned that they lose Terrell Brown. They also lost Bradley Fletcher, who was a waste of an addition. And throughout your whole training camp, you're planning with him to be your number two or three, and he was just a waste. So you really kind of set yourself back with Fletcher in the cornerback position. So if they're going to make a trade, I would agree that cornerback is the way to go. And offensive line, you know, with the way that they've been handling things, Belichick and Scarnecchia of years past, I know he's not there anymore, but, you know, they've been very successful with this for a week or two, or find that chip on the bottom of the depth chart and have him play for a game, and they can pass just fine until Wendell and Stork are back. And if Cannon's healthy, it's a moot point anyways. But that's all we have for tonight's Patriots postgame show. Jeff, it's been wonderful getting back on the airwaves with you. Hopefully we can do it again in the near future. I know, right? It's weird. But, you know, we'll be back at it next week as the Patriots take on the Jets, a 1 o'clock game. So we'll be live right after the game. We want to thank everyone for listening and who will download the podcast. Again, the FanDuel hotline stays the same every week, 929-477-2386. The New England Patriots defeat the Indianapolis Colts 34-27 to improve to 5-0 on the season. Thank you to everyone listening, and we'll see you next time.
Internet Sports Talk Radio, CLNS Radio.